Over the last 30 years, we've seen a return of elk to Wisconsin, where they were gone for almost more than a century. Now that the elk are back, we're keeping our eye on them, their populations, and their health, and perhaps you have a question or an elk story to share. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest is Josh Spiegel, a wildlife biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And you can join our elk conversation this half hour by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can always send us an email to talk@wpr.org. And Josh, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Lee. Really appreciate you guys reaching out and inviting me.
I think elk are fascinating, right? They are these big monster characters. Would they be considered the largest mammals of Wisconsin these days?
Yeah, we get the occasional moose that rolls through. You know, that's the next step bigger there. So I would say in general, yes, but kind of the middle brother in that deer family anyway.
Do we have an estimated count on the elk population as it stands today, Josh?
Yeah, so we did run our 2026 population projections last winter. We figure in the northern zone, which I'm a little bit more tied to, we projected about 383 elk. In the central zone, we should have been just over about 220 this year. So statewide, we're right around that 600 number.
Wow. So this is in the, since we've reintroduced them, and I believe that was in 1995, we brought about, 95 or so elk from Michigan. How did that initial reintroduction go for us?
Yeah, so you're right. 1995, we actually brought 25 elk from Michigan. Yep, and those 25 elk actually started off as an experiment through UW-Stevens Point. And that actually came about through a real grassroots effort. You know, at that point in time, the Wisconsin DNR had a lot going on. We didn't want to commit to bringing back this large ungulate. So major partners like Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, the university system, and a ton of private citizens got together and lobbied for this experiment to come about. And fortunately for elk in Wisconsin and what became the future of them, Governor Tommy Thompson granted the authority through the state budget to authorize this experiment through UW-Stevens Point in conjunction with receiving the 25 elk from the state of Michigan. And from there, they ran the four-year effort. It was concluded after the population doubled in size that elk could sustain on our landscape, and then they became management authority of the Wisconsin DNR.
What's the argument for returning elk? I know that, they were part of our natural history, but what are the reasons that were given that such an effort was made to return them here?
Yeah, so obviously that is a big one, you know, a historical animal that lived in the southern plains of Wisconsin primarily, but really inhabited all of the state of Wisconsin. Historic remnants found them in all habitat types, et cetera, across the board. But they're a large grazing species that has the ability to maintain the forest as such. Now, that could be, you know, savanna ground. You talk about something like bison, a large hooven animal that kind of beats up the ground as they move around. You see that woodland, savanna, prairie kind of aspect to that. Elk maybe aren't quite that dramatic at altering the landscape, but they can create that impact, create more of a wooded habitat with forbs, fauna, and everything that benefits from that that grass species that can be created on the forest floor.
So they have an ecological role to play to help keep our environment healthy.
That is correct. Yep. And diverse, right? They're not going to alter everything, but patches here and there that create that diversity within our forested landscape.
And since that initial test run in 1995, we brought, and I'm going to get the numbers wrong here, I think it was like 150 were authorized by the state legislature. And am I mistaken? Did I read that right from the DNR? They came from Kentucky?
Yeah, you're correct. So 100% correct with that. So what we basically did is once the DNR took stuff over, the elk population started to grow. For anyone that follows kind of wildlife management and the natural process, starting with 25 animals of any species isn't a great starting point. You know, pretty small, but our population did grow. They started to kind of level out through the late 2000s. And all of this occurred only in the greater Clam Lake area. So northern Wisconsin, northwest Wisconsin, greater Ashland, Sawyer, Bayfield, Price counties. And when those animals were released and started to grow, they kind of hit a point where everything slowed down. And we knew specifically from a genetic standpoint, we got these 25 animals from Michigan who got their elk in the early 1900s from 7 animals from Yellowstone National Park. So talk about some genetic bottlenecking when it comes to that herd. So knowing that this would be a long-term issue, maybe not something we are dealing with at this exact point in time, we wanted to start looking into the future, growing the herd. So that's when Kentucky kind of raised their hand. So they actually started their herd about the same time, 1998, but they started with over 1,550 elk.
Whoa.
And they brought elk from 6 different Western states. So they have some of the most genetically diverse elk in North America. They were also at the point where they were at kind of stable population. They had started doing some reintroduction efforts with Missouri and Virginia, and Wisconsin kind of raised their hand and said, we would love some elk if you're willing to work with us. And that began a relationship. Like you said, we got authorization to bring up to 150 elk to the state of Wisconsin. And through that authorization, came the establishment of our central herd, or the greater Black River herd, and then a supplementation to our northern herd in the greater Clam Lake, and now kind of the southern end, which we expanded near the Flambeau River State Forest area. So in all, we actually established the central herd with 73 elk and 91 in the northern herd. Now, for any math majors out there, that's more than 150 elk. The reason is we identified a target being adult cow elk, and adult females usually bring young that hadn't been born yet.
So sure.
We actually got bonus elk when we brought these elk from the state of Kentucky.
So, Josh, in your role with the DNR, have you been able to go out there? Have you been able to, you know, watch these elk? And what have you learned from these animals? And you know, what kind of strikes you about Wisconsin's elk population today?
Yeah, I think the really cool thing is, and you kind of started the show off with it, they're such a unique animal. you know, they're in the deer family, but in a sense of how we think of deer in the Wisconsin landscape, they're totally different. They're a herd-associated animal. So usually if you see one, you're seeing more than one. And if not, sometimes in the big groups, you know, it's not uncommon in various points of the year to see 40, 50, 60 elk in a given situation. Now that might be generally some type of open space where you can count that many elk, but a large timber sale or a field, wildlife opening, something like that. But they're unique. You get into their physical characteristics. They're large animals, big in stature, you know, bulls up to 800-900 pounds with, you know, 4 or 5 feet worth of antler on top of their head. You get into this time of the year, actually, it's funny, I was out this morning in the woods looking at a project and didn't see any elk, but it's that time of year, cold, crisp mornings. And, you know, in certain areas, you're going to hear a bugle ringing out through the woods, you know, this type of call similar to, let's say, a loon or a wolf or a turkey gobble in the springtime that just echoes on the landscape. You know, it's unique. You don't hear that, you know, white-tailed deer vocalize, but it's kind of that real quiet grunt. You know, hunters kind of tie into that, but this is a loud bellowing noise that just echoes through the river corridors. You know, extremely unique for what we get to experience.
What are they calling out for? What are they mating? Is this the time of year?
Yep. This is the time of year.
Hey, ladies.
Right. The the boys are looking for girls, and then they're looking to fight, you know, a little schoolyard fight here and there. So, yeah. So it's, it's a territorial call. They use it to communicate. So one thing that, a lot of people don't actually realize is elk are highly, highly social, which comes with, their herd association, but they're extremely vocal. So throughout the year, they're highly vocal with each other. They do what's called mew and chirps, and they actually have what's called an alarm bark or a bark. So it'll sound like a dog bark through a tube, you know, long tubular throat that they have. They have this real deep gut bellow that they let out, and that's kind of their alarm. You know, hey, something's not right. We got to get out of here. We got to start moving, because them being spread out over a greater area, they have to communicate verbally. It's not always a physical cue that gets them out of the area. You know, I think white-tailed deer in the flag, you know, they get nervous, their tail goes up, they see that, they expand. Well, elk, what they do is they vocalize that communication and relay, you know, that that warning, that alarm, that hey, something's not right here.
I guess I didn't realize how social these animals were, how strong these herds are, and how they work in concert to some degree. Mm-hmm. And while you say that it's time of the year for fighting and mating and stuff, that, you know, generally that these guys are all working together.
Yep, 100%. Yep, that's a great way to put it. They kind of create their own orchestra out there on the landscape.
Josh, have we seen any unintended consequences? I always wonder about that when we are reintroducing something that's been away for a century plus, you know, some of the things that we did not expect to find but did.
Yeah, I wouldn't really say at this juncture in time we found anything that was unknown. We do have obviously conflict and nuisance out there when you bring any animal land back to the landscape, especially one that has changed, like you mentioned, in the last 100, 150 years since they roamed Wisconsin. There's going to be impacts. We did a lot of background work ahead of time, and we're still doing work trying to kind of navigate some of those situations. The other thing that I would say that we focus very heavily about, a question that we get quite often, and it's kind of tied to a lot of different things, is why isn't the population bigger? Well, we have our goals, we have our targets we want to get to. But the other thing is we haven't had elk on our landscape in 100 plus years. So we want to learn as they start growing. So the faster we grow it, the harder that learning curve is to navigate some of these tough situations that we might have to deal with. Obviously, one of the big ones is agricultural nuisance. A large grazing animal that can have a negative impact on agricultural producers. I don't think I have to tell anyone, vehicle collisions are another one. Yep. I don't think anyone wants to hit an animal that size. And, depending on the type of vehicle, can be very bad for the driver and or the elk. So we have a couple situations like that that we continue to work with our partners on the landscape, whether that be a private individual, other partners, et cetera, landowners, and try to navigate those. So that's a reason we don't want to explode the herd too fast. We want to continue to learn how to navigate these challenges that we have in front of us.
Do they birth only one elk at a time?
Very infrequent twins. Okay. We actually brought a cow from Kentucky that was pregnant with twins. Unfortunately, they did not make it. So elk have a very narrow birthing canal, and they have, so I'll put it this way. An elk calf and a moose calf are born on average about the same size, about mid 30, 35, 38 pounds. Moose, it's very common to see twins, and that mother is twice the size of an adult cow elk. So you can just kind of think about that comparison body size wise. But yes, in general, they're putting off one single calf. So they're kind of putting all their eggs into one offspring every year. The benefit with elk is they are a very long-lived species. So we've got elk on our landscape right now between 20 and 25 years of age. They're not as productive on that back end, but still producing pretty heavily between about the ages of 2 and 3 and about 15, 16 years old. They're getting pregnant almost annually. So, so that cow might not produce twins every year, but she's producing a large amount of calves through her lifespan.
I think we've got a moose call that we can use here for reference. I would like to hear it and see if it stands the hair on the back of my neck up.
You.
Well, those are crickets. I know that sound.
Yeah, there's sometimes I've been out there and there's crickets in the woods too. So.
But I will say that it does have a loon-like quality to it. It does ring out through, I did get my hair on the back of my neck to stand up a little bit, Josh. Yeah.
It's one of a few things, and I'll be honest, I really get caught up in what we do, you know, when we're going out and doing various either surveys, sometimes we do tour groups, that kind of stuff. And you get caught in the moment of, you know what, this is really cool. Yeah. Like, take aside my professional status where I am, like, just watching these animals. You know, I'll paint a very quick picture here for the listeners, but a couple years ago, we were out doing a morning survey. So we try to go in on these animals. You know where the bulls are. They're bugling. You want to see what's around. Generally, there's a handful, and there's cows, there's calves. So we can get an idea of what these subgroups look like just on the activity. So we struck in on this point. We got down in there, and there was about five different bulls bugling in a river going back and forth. So you're talking about the stream rushing up and down, the animals splashing around, bulls chasing each other, chasing cows, then the bugling. You add in four or five different bulls bugling. And it was one of those mornings where you just sat down and said, this is amazing. You know, this is cool. And then you know, like you said, you just played that bull elk bugle. You hear that echo through the woods. Yeah. And realistically, you get on top of it. You're like, how can I hear this from miles away? But then you add in, you know, the river corridor, elevation, tree leaves and all this. And you're like, man, okay, you could probably only hear it from a half mile, three quarters, maybe a mile away in right conditions, where you want to think like, oh man, I could hear this from the other side of the state, you know, and that's just not the case. So, very few times that I've been with other people, whether it's a tour group or something, when that first bull strikes off and you just see the people's jaw hit the ground, and it's just something unique.
Josh Spiegel is our guest. He's got the coolest job in the world, wildlife biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, taking a look at the two different areas where we now have elk in about a population of 600, at least according to the last estimate, and want to invite you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And let's go to Morgan in Ashland County. Hi, Morgan.
Hello, Josh. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Morgan?
I'm doing good. I'll try to make this as positive as possible, but I hope you will address the negative effects the elk have had upon some of us, particularly farmers, on our crops.
Yep, and we did get into that a little bit, Morgan. You know, we're continuing to learn with our elk and the damage that they're doing, what we can and what is not effective with managing them as a tool. So we're hoping to learn from our elk while we have them on the landscape. We might not have all the answers right now, but we're working towards those answers and making sure that all aspects of elk management are acceptable for people across the state. You know, we've got both sides of the spectrum we're trying to level out.
Sure. And while this might not have been unforeseen, it's one of those unintended consequences that you'd want to protect. We want to, you know, protect our farmers as much as we want to protect our elk here. And so do we know, are there other areas where we've seen a way to defend our farmers against elk predation?
Yeah, I mean, we continue to work in different scenarios. So not only in-state here, we're trying to learn from our Wisconsin elk, but we continually reach out to other states that might be having similar issues. We just started talking a lot closer with Michigan and Minnesota, with some other producers other managers in states like Pennsylvania and Missouri and stuff like that. We also know that there's folks in kind of that western or eastern side of the Rockies, foothill type area, the Kansas, Nebraska areas that have elk and are high in the producer side of things. Mm-hmm. So we're working to find abatement tools. The tough thing with elk is they travel so far. You know, unlike, let's say we'll take white-tailed deer for an example, the home range of an adult white-tailed doe is about 1 square mile. So she's probably using the same fields, day in after day. Well, elk, they might be on one field today and then a field 5-6 miles away tomorrow or later that day. So they continue to travel and move around. So some of the abatement tools that we have in our toolbox aren't as adequate as other species. One thing that is highly effective, and Morgan's actually an individual that I work with on a regular basis. So one thing we're trying to do is relocate some of those elk when they get to numbers that are too damaging to that localized area, maybe a small farming community, and interject them into areas of high quality habitat in other places of the elk range that should be more suitable for nuisance damage conflict, but yet beneficial to the population. Moving forward, I think a lot of people in the state know that we also have a hunting season. So right. This year we have some new implementation we're going through with, which is the use of hunting units or unit groupings, and that we can also start issuing tags to specific locations at a smaller level. It's still not, you know, the farm level or, you know, a square mile, but smaller blocks of area, we could increase our take or our quota for harvest and hopefully start utilizing that hunting recreation to decrease some of that. And maybe not all direct, some of it's disturbance. We get hunters in there, we get whatever it might be to disturb those elk, maybe they'll move off to additional locations as well.
Danny emailed us wondering if we have to worry about CWD being passed from our white-tailed deer to the elk.
Yep, CWD is a concern. Yep, so we do want to be very careful with that. Right now, we have not tested CWD in any Wisconsin elk. We continue to routinely test deer both in the elk management zones and around the elk management zones. So our wildlife health team works very closely with me and my counterpart out of Black River Falls to make sure we're getting the best knowledge as we can for monitoring. Some of the concern we do have is elk, are a long-lived species. So, you know, the potential of long-term impacts is greater, but also that herd associated aspect. Again, usually when you see one elk, you're seeing more than one elk. And knowing that CWD is a concern when it comes to higher density of animals, elk definitely raise a red flag when it comes to that density concern.
Our producer, Claire, is wondering this, and now I am too, the way you describe it, Josh, about elk tourism. And you had mentioned taking tour groups around before. How can we do this the respectful way, and in what way, if we wanted to see these and hear these elk for ourselves, should we go about it?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So we don't generally take tour groups out as the department. We work with nonprofit groups, museums, Natural Resource Foundation is a big partner we do tours with. And we kind of lump stuff together, you know, habitat talks and all this, and we tie it together. We also have major partners like Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. Matter of fact, this weekend is Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation Bugle Days, where we want to promote elk in all aspects in the state of Wisconsin. So we really hope that we can get people out for that. But when it comes to elk tourism, just like anything, right? It's vital to our communities. I talk about Clam Lake, Wisconsin, the quote unquote elk capital of Wisconsin, because that's where they started. Well, you go there and you see the gas station, and the gas station is wrapped with elk, you know, logos and pictures and memorabilia inside. You go to the fuel pump, and this really gets me. You look at the fuel pump. This is the most creative thing ever. They've got four grades of fuel. They're low grade, medium grade, high grade gasoline. One is a spike bull, a young juvenile bull. One is an immature bull elk. And then the premium gas is a mature bull elk with these big antlers. And then their diesel, they've got a bear sticker over the top of, you know. So it's stuff like that that's extremely creative. But I look at that. That's in all my presentations. Whenever I give a presentation, that picture is on there because that means something to the community. It means dollars. It means people. It means vacationers that come out. In regards to actually physically going and seeing elk, you know, we hope that people respect distance, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we want you to utilize them, go see them, see the stuff that we've been able to do. But that's what we want people to enjoy.
And we want you to take us with you, Josh. So really appreciate you sharing your report with us. Really want to invite you back and would really rather have you invite us out. So thanks so much for your time today and looking forward to catching up with you and our elk sometime soon.
Thank you very much, Lee. This has been a blast. I can't believe it's already over.
I know, that went by quick. And we had more moose noises to make, too. Josh Spiegel, wildlife biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, on Wisconsin's two different elk populations in our state and how they are growing. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you are listening to WPR News.